Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today, our discussion is centered around Thanksgiving. For some, the day is an opportunity to gather with family and friends for a traditional turkey dinner. For others, Thanksgiving Day is a reminder of the genocide of millions of Native people, the theft of Native lands, and the erasure of Native cultures. Later in the hour, we talk about the traditions of food, family, and maybe even football. We want to hear how you're observing Thanksgiving this year, how your thinking around the holiday has changed over time, and how the pandemic is impacting your plans. But first, we consider why Americans celebrate Thanksgiving and how myth and historical events have helped shape how we observe the day. With us is Molly Herman. She produced, wrote, and co-directed the new film Behind the Holiday Thanksgiving. Welcome.
Thank you.
So the film doesn't just focus on the first Thanksgiving. You take viewers through different periods in American history to explain how and why the meaning and significance of Thanksgiving has changed over time. But let's start with the, you know, quote, first Thanksgiving. This story has been part of the American elementary school curriculum for decades. What do you consider the biggest and perhaps most damaging myths, misconceptions, or denials of truth that have been associated with the first Thanksgiving over the years?
Well, you know, I think that Thanksgiving has served a role. You know, it's not just a holiday. It's actually been a response to the things that are happening in the country. And I kind of put it into a category with two other stories that also have to do with Native American people. And one is Pocahontas and the other is Sacagawea. And so, you know, that those two stories and the Thanksgiving meal, you know, all cast Native American people as helpers. And they're also moments of, you know, cooperation. And so I think it's no accident that those are the things that we, you know, the stories that we like, that we feel comfortable with. You know, Pocahontas is inscribed on the frieze that goes around the inside of the rotunda in the Capitol Dome. You know, these are the way that we think about our early relationships with Native American people, and they're just completely, you know, exceptions to the rule. It's not that they weren't true. And the same with the first Thanksgiving. You know, it's not that it wasn't true that there was a meal. There was a meal, and it was a moment of relative peace and cooperation. And I think the fact that that's what we focus on at all is kind of, you know, problematic. But looking into that first Thanksgiving 400 years ago, the way that it's characterized is also kind of skewed, unsurprisingly.
There was a written account of what we refer to as the first Thanksgiving. Tell us a little bit. That was Edward Winslow. Tell us about him and what we can glean from that account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the I don't know, the history is sort of written by the, you know, the victors or whatever. And in the case of much of what we know about that time, it does come from letters written by English settlers. And he was one of them. And he was actually kind of promoted to being in charge there in Plymouth because they had had a lot of sickness once the Mayflower landed. And he was a survivor. So the power sort of shifted to this younger generation of men, like in their late 20s, early 30s. He was one of them. And he had a good relationship with the leader of the Wampanoag people, whose name was Usamequin. Really throughout their lives, they stayed on good terms. And, you know, he talks about you know, he gives us some clues about what happened, and it's the only reason we know that that meal happened at all. But what's kind of not what our film kind of goes into, and what's not really widely known, is that the dynamics of the meeting were pretty different than how we imagine. You know, we looked at a lot of old paintings of Thanksgiving, and they would always have, you know, a few Native Americans sort of serving food or sitting around on the ground eating. And in all likelihood, they weren't invited guests. You know, they had shown up to either to see what was going on or possibly to cement a treaty that they had recently signed, promising, you know, mutual defense. The only reason that the pilgrims were allowed to settle, other Europeans had sort of swung by and seemed like they might stay and were never allowed to, was because Usamequin thought maybe they would provide a tactical advantage to, in his own diplomacy with traditional enemies, particularly because the Wampanoag people had gone through this devastating plague where, you know, 90% of people were killed and they were in a position of weakness. So they thought, okay, maybe weapons, maybe trade, maybe this little troop of, you know, people with their unusual religion who were kicked out of England and then, you know, left Holland and ended up coming to America in a bit of a last ditch search for a new life might actually aid them. So and then the thing that we do find out from Winslow's letter is that which has not been popularized is that the English were greatly outnumbered by the Wampanoag, you know, like 10 to 1 at that event, which is something else that you don't ever see in a painting or any kind of depiction.
Members of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe are interviewed and featured in the film, parts of which were shot on location at Plymouth Patuxent. Talk about collaborating with tribal members and their contributions to the film.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, that's incredibly important to telling this kind of story. And Plymouth Patuxent has this wonderful program. This, you know, they have the English village, which is people portraying people back in time as English settlers. But they have the Wampanoag home site, which is different. It's not portraying people back in time and playing a role. It's modern Wampanoag people who are educating the public about their culture and history. And you know, that's for a reason. And it's because, you know, Wampanoag people have kept their cultural identity, their traditions straight on into the modern age, despite, you know, many efforts to assimilate Native American people. That's always been, you know, I think that's an extremely sort of interesting discovery for an average American to make, is that there's a real continuity between then and now for in the way that Wampanoag people view the world and themselves. And so, so we worked with folks from Plymouth and, you know, other leaders in the community to sort of talk through what Thanksgiving, you know, sort of how I don't want to speak for them, but, you know, sort of how they feel about the myth part of it, and, you know, how they feel about the sort of omission of the rest of the story, which is kind of the most problematic thing.
As you're saying, the film points out that what we refer to as the first Thanksgiving was actually just this gathering, right, between Europeans and Wampanoags. Didn't happen ever again after 1621, but did white Europeans continue a harvest celebration in the years or decades that followed that first Thanksgiving?
Yeah, Thanksgiving, it's kind of a long and messy story. You know, there was, of course, a tradition of a harvest celebration that came from Europe, and that was continued. It was the other confusing part about it is the name Thanksgiving, which was a religious thing. So Thanksgiving would be a day when you would go to church and, you know, give thanks and have like a 6-hour trip to church, you know, with lots and lots of praying. And the evening would be kind of like breaking of a fast, but it wouldn't be the main event. And so somewhere along the way, the harvest festival part and the Thanksgiving religious part kind of got stuck together and became its own thing. And then around, you know, it became formalized around the time of the Civil War, where Abraham Lincoln made it a national day. Then there was, you know, there's a cool story about it, a lot of clubs and efforts coming together to fundraise and bring Thanksgiving dinner to the Union troops after the Battle of Gettysburg was won. and then it was kind of used as a northern, a symbol of northern virtue. Although we do make the point in the film that there was plenty of slavery going on in the North at the time, including Native American slavery. So, there's still a Wampanoag colony on the island of Bermuda today, because so many people were taken and forced into slavery in the Caribbean. So it's this like long, crazy story, really, how Thanksgiving evolved. And it also makes you realize, for a while there wasn't, for a period of time, Christmas was not popularized as a, we think of that as kind of something that's gone on forever. So Thanksgiving was the main winter holiday, and like the song Jingle Bells was a Thanksgiving song. Thanksgiving was also when, there would be costumes and dressing up. And so it was kind of also a proto Halloween. So Thanksgiving was this catch-all. It's history. It's just sort of this kind of crazy long story. But what it really means to me is that it was always reflecting the times that were happening. So, there's a lot of immigration around the turn of the century. Well, Thanksgiving gets very popular again because people are worried about all this diversity. And Thanksgiving is used as a, as a way to say, oh, well, we are an English nation. We come from English stock. These are our English traditions. Just like that, it took quite a while for Thanksgiving to catch on in the South, because it was a Northern thing in the Civil War. It wasn't really till football got going that Southern people, really embraced Thanksgiving and kind of got over that divide.
Yeah, in those years leading up to the Civil War, Thanksgiving was also celebrated on different days throughout the country. There wasn't a unified day. And that changed thanks to Sarah Hale, who tell us who she was and how she initiated this more modern day Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Sarah Josepha Hale was, she was like an influencer at that time. And she worked, she was an editor of Godey's Women's Magazine, Godey's Ladies Magazine, which was, kind of like Pinterest of the mid, I guess, 1800s. And so she had a long campaign to try to get Thanksgiving nationalized. And she wrote letters to many, many presidents, and she was influential in getting Abraham Lincoln to declare this day. And she was sort of like the Martha Stewart. So she helped people understand, what the tradition should be. This is how you make a turkey. These are the pies. This is how you set the table. So she really went, she really did kind of carve out a lot of the sort of things that we now expect from a modern Thanksgiving began with her.
Yeah. When did we start referring to the 1621 gathering between Wampanoags and Europeans as the first Thanksgiving, and why was that connection made?
Yeah, that was not for about 200 years after the 1621 event. And it was really a kind of an interest in, it was sort of an American Revolution brought up these identity issues for America, and kind of thinking about religious persecution, and that these were the people who had escaped religious persecution in England, and that Thanksgiving got connected to that as sort of an American ideal. So we sort of looked back and found that occurrence. It also had to do with Edward Winslow's writings being unearthed around that time. So it just became this very attractive story. And also, we were moving into a time where the kind of great genocide of Native American people in America was reaching its conclusion. Many people were now you know, the numbers were greatly reduced. People were relegated to reservations. So the Native American, you know, quote unquote problem had kind of gone from a real threat to European settlers into kind of a nostalgia. And what Americans, I think, realize is that when they're looking for this identity of their new country, they say, well, what's different about us than, say, England? And Native Americans always come up. You know, it's the same reason why, you know, we as a nation, we love all that iconography so much. You know, we love the Plains Indian with the feathered headdress. It's on tons of products and, you know, Land O'Lakes butter and the Jeep Cherokee. And it's just everywhere. And it's because there's this idea attached to it that it's part of what makes us American. Now it's all kind of an inconvenient jumble of what really happened with all of that. But it's sort of for the same reason as these safe stories of interaction with Native American people are sort of held up as things that are prized.
And you're sort of answering this question, but can you talk about how we historians, politicians, everyday people shape the historical record by what we choose to focus on or how we choose to frame it when it takes and what it takes to accurately represent historical truth?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that historical truth has to do with where you are in history and what's important to you. And you know, for instance, it's absolutely impossible to separate this history from the importance of religion at the time. You know, the way that English settlers felt was that they were chosen by God, and that people who weren't chosen by God, you know, were not, you know, were primitive compared to them, and that therefore did not need to be given the same level of respect. Of course, it's very messy. They converted a lot of Native American people and still didn't protect them, you know, when war came and that kind of thing. But I think that Thanksgiving has really reflected the moments that, you know, has reflected the history all along. And I think the tendency to do that continues. But, you know, I guess I don't view Thanksgiving's history as a disqualifier. You know, if you took a cancellation lens to American traditions and history, you might not be left with much. The reality is, you know, land taken by force from Native Americans, prosperity built by slave labor. But I think that the best way that you can honor the truth around the Thanksgiving is to know it, you know, to know the story. For me, it's things like, who were those people? Well, they were called the Wampanoag. And, you know, Winslow didn't write their name in his letter, and it's not popularized. It's just Pilgrims and Indians. So, you know, I think that Thanksgiving can come to represent whatever we want, and that as previous generations have done that, you know, that can be our responsibility too. Actually, the historian Marcia Chatelain said it perfectly in our film. She said, there's nothing inevitable about how Thanksgiving has to be celebrated.
Fast forward to today, the school curriculum around Thanksgiving has changed in the last generation, and we're debunking many of the myths and misconceptions associated with the first Thanksgiving and Native people. Do you think we can honor the truth about the first Thanksgiving and acknowledge the misconceptions and denials of facts that shaped the Thanksgiving holiday over time, while at the same time continuing the traditions of food, family, and thankfulness that many associate with the day?
Well, I certainly do. I mean, I don't come from a population of people who have had to live, you know, kind of in the bullseye of this myth, so I can't speak for everyone. But I think that a tradition that's based on giving thanks, gratitude, is the perfect tradition to kind of incorporate understanding and reflect. I think gratitude creates that space. And, you know, when I've asked Wampanoag people what they do for Thanksgiving, you know, I've heard different things, but everybody normally, you know, naturally appreciates a day off with their family. And I think as a basis, spending time with your family or, you know, creating new traditions like Friendsgiving, I think that's very interesting that that's a new thing. You know, we may not live near extended families or have extended families anymore, but we've you know, made this new modern idea, right, of creating a Thanksgiving with the people that are our adopted families. You know, and Thanksgiving gets a lot of, and I understand why, because it's a unity thing, right? It's a national holiday. We all come together for it. So it's a great opportunity to really kind of drill down. I think that there's really a kind of vast number of things to be drilled down on. And I hope that thinking about Thanksgiving can kind of open the door to, you know, if we're gonna kind of honor the conversations that we're having this nation about social justice and equity, Thanksgiving's a great place to look. But that's you know, a kind of a sort of like Earth Day is every day, like a once a year conversation about how ironic it is that, you know, Thanksgiving was the beginning of the end for Native American people, is a start. But, you know, understanding the bigger picture of how the nation has come to be and reckoning with that and you know, hopefully, hopefully kind of rebalancing our ideas about, you know, I don't know what it is, America being the greatest, you know, it's like, sure, okay, but just understanding the path, I think, is really important. And, you know, probably a good place to find some humility in a time where that is needed.
Molly Herman's film Behind the Holiday, Thanksgiving, premieres Monday, November 22nd on the Smithsonian Channel. We'll post links with more information about the film at our website, capeandislands.org. Molly Herman, thanks so much for taking time to be with us and for doing the film.
Thank you so much.
How are you observing the day this year? How has your thinking about Thanksgiving and its meaning changed over time? Is the pandemic impacting your plans? We also want to hear what parts of the day you like best. Food, football, and are there certain aspects around the holiday you dread? Join the conversation at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send an email to thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about Thanksgiving this hour. How are you observing the day this year? How has your thinking about Thanksgiving and its meaning changed over time? And is the pandemic impacting your plans? You can join the conversation at 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Joining us now is Gail Blakely. She's the food columnist for the Enterprise Newspapers. Welcome back, Gail. Good to
Thank
see you.
Thank you.
And also with us is Annie Copps. She is Yankee Magazine Senior Editor of Food. Nice to have you back, Annie. Hi. I can't hear Annie. Are you muted?
Are you muted?
Double check.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Muted. I was muted. It's good to be here.
Okay. And then I have to mute me. Okay. All right. So
the Zoom thing, yeah,
we are
every time.
Okay, we're not in the same place this year as we were last year in terms of pandemic. We're not pre-pandemic times either. So in terms of travel and get-togethers, what looks different for you this year, Annie, compared to the last couple of years?
Well, in the past, you know, we've had gatherings of, you know, 25 to 30 people that were just these fantastic, you know, I think planning the D-Day or the storming of Normandy was a little bit easier than pulling off our family Thanksgivings. But now this year and last year, there will be about six of us. I will be with my parents who are elderly and some of their neighbors, and we'll still do the whole soup to nuts dinner, but it's a much smaller gathering.
Yeah.
We're still not gathering in large crowds, and no one wants to really get on airplanes right now and stay in hotels and all of that. So That's where we're at.
What about you, Gail?
No, it's very, very similar. I think we've really downsized. I can think of last year was just two or three people, and this year is still two or three people. It's just not what it used to be. And in some ways, it's more special. Mm-hmm. It feels more special because it's more focused.
Right. Yeah. So. And we have another thing this year is food shortages, right? I mean, Gail, before when you were talking about trying to find some turkeys for your TV show.
And it was a challenge. To call all over the place, was able to finally find some frozen ones. But even the price of frozen ones, I remember when they were 39 cents and now frozen ones are at 79 and rising. And you can't find larger birds, apparently. So there are shortages. And I'm sure, you know, the green bean casserole will be suffering because the cans of green beans are looking pretty scarce on the shelves, and it's a little different world over the past 3 years now.
Yeah. So, Annie, we got to be creative, right? If we can't get our green bean casserole, we're gonna have to come up with some other ideas. Yeah. All right. Annie is giving us a call from Wellfleet. Hi, Annie.
Hi.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I love your conversation about Thanksgiving, and it's been a challenging holiday for me. As a young person, I decided it was being celebrated wrongfully and started fasting as a teenager. And I did that for maybe 15 years. And as an adult now with children, I still feel like I want to have a conversation about the origin of Thanksgiving and the impact that settlers had on the Native people with my children, instead of a narrative that it's just about eating. And mm-hmm. I have, as much as I absolutely adore being with friends and family and gratitude, and I feel like I got a little disgruntled that it was only for Thanksgiving, and I thought every day we should give thanks for the people and the things that we have, and less about overeating and gluttony and football, which football's great, but the holiday turned into something that didn't feel as right celebrating. And I think in the time of COVID, with people having less and getting to see the people that they love less, I feel like maybe it's a good time to switch that narrative to more gratitude every day for what we have. Eating less, I mean, if everybody ate a little less at Thanksgiving, it'd be more for people that don't have the benefit of food. And I don't know, I'd like to see it become something that really works for everybody and is really has a strong thread of truth in the background of the holiday. But I'm excited to celebrate it with my extended family. We're all getting tested and try to be together for Thanksgiving this year with my husband's family. So I'm grateful for that. But I'm glad you guys are having this narrative today.
Hey, thanks, Annie. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. Appreciate that. 866-999-4626 if you'd like to share your thoughts. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We've got an email from Laura in Falmouth who says, I usually host all of the family holidays and greet them with a mix of anticipation and dread. Last year, we kept to a small pod of five. Social distancing was a welcome reprieve from the expense, financial and energetic, and the stress. This year is meant to be a reunion. My brother and his fiance, both unvaccinated by choice, are traveling up from Florida. He will pick up his two young children, vaccination status unknown, from his ex-wife. The plan is for them to join my fully vaccinated family of four, plus our 80-year-old mother, who has had her booster, for Thanksgiving dinner and in a restaurant. My sister-in-law, who is fully vaccinated, is refusing to join us, not based on perceived risk, but in protest of my brother's choice. She does not want to spend time with any unvaccinated people and condone their behavior. I quite agree, but feel like I'm stuck in the middle. That's a tough situation to be in, right?
Yeah, sure. It's talk about making the holiday political, huh?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's so hard, yeah. Go ahead, Annie.
Well, nobody but your family can really get you like that, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's part of what these big holidays are all about, is some sort of family unraveling as well. You know?
Yeah. Let's take a listen to a voice memo we have.
This is Jeanette Barnes, reporter, producer at CAI. Being with the extended family is definitely what I'm most grateful for this Thanksgiving. I'm going to be spending time with a bigger group indoors than I have since before the pandemic. Last year, we didn't get together at all, so it's great that things are different now. I feel fortunate that everyone who's coming is vaccinated and that it's not an issue in the family. The youngest kids will only have their first dose, though, so we're going to be careful about that. We have some traditional foods that we eat. There's a stuffing recipe that's 5 generations old from my father's side. We also have newer foods that have been brought into the family over the years. But one of the biggest things for me on Thanksgiving food-wise is the little buffet of appetizers that we do while the meal is cooking. The star of this buffet for me is my mother's homemade cheese ball rolled in nuts. She has been making it as long as I can remember. We also have shrimp, and my dad makes a lentil pate. So we have crackers, cheese, pate, drinks, and so on. To me, it's like a very relaxed time with no other agenda other than food and family. And all of that symbolizes being thankful for the important things.
I'm going to have to ask Jeanette about that stuffing recipe, right?
Yeah, I think the lentil pate sounds pretty good, too.
Yeah, so. Although I have to say, my husband does make a really good stuffing. And what we do is we will be going to my in-laws with my husband's brother's family. And we're all, again, also vaccinated, except for the youngest one has just had his first shot. And I love this idea because, you know, it can be really stressful and expensive, right? So my Absolutely. Mother-in-law will make the turkey. That will be her thing. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of us bring different sides. And mm-hmm. and it's then that way it's you know, a little less stressful, a little, mm-hmm. you know, everybody gets to try a little something.
Are they traditional sides? Are they the ones that people sort of have perfected over the years?
You know, I think it changes. Definitely the, you know, the stuffing and the mashed potatoes and mm-hmm. gravy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the vegetable sides can be different. We don't do the green bean casserole. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we ever have, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm not really mm-hmm. sure. And then the desserts, of course, are always something different
right,
as well.
Right. It's yeah. almost like you need to have Thanksgiving at noon and then wait until evening and have dessert. Because
exactly.
it's a little yeah. much afterwards.
Yeah. And is there anything special in your menu on Thanksgiving that you do every year?
We do a fairly traditional spread. We do, there's a lot. We've been making a cranberry chutney that I learned when I was in culinary school. It's Julie Sani's recipe, and it's absolutely fantastic. Ooh. But my mom, Julie Sani's a wonderful Indian cook. She's written a few cookbooks, and I'd be happy to send you the recipe.
Love that, yeah.
Yeah. It's pistachio and dried fruit and cranberries, which, I mean, you've got to have cranberries on this holiday table for sure. But then my mom always has to have the Ocean Spray cranberry jelly with the, you know, the ring marks from
the can.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's got to have that on the, and it gets eaten. Yeah. So it, you know, it, I mean, it's, it, it is what it is on that one, but we are pretty, you know, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, stuffing, there, what I love about a big Thanksgiving though, and when you have other people come, they always bring what was like their Thanksgiving thing that they had to have. And it could be the green beans with the onion rings on top of it, or it could be, the sweet potatoes with the marshmallows on top of it. So you kind of, if you invite your, or open the doors up to your home and people come who you don't even know as well, and they bring this thing, it becomes part of your Thanksgiving the following year,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we've got an email from Karen, who's the executive director of Falmouth Service Center. She says, I'm listening to the show this morning. It's very interesting. I just want to say that here in Falmouth, Thanksgiving has always been a celebration of our community and the idea of giving to others. I'm lucky enough to work at the Falmouth Service Center, and every year we hold our annual turkey drop-off day on the Sunday before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Without fail, our community comes out in droves on this day, bringing us hundreds of turkeys, always surpassing all expectations. Last year, there were long lines up and down Gifford Street in Falmouth, with car after car waiting patiently to come up our driveway and drop off a turkey. Volunteers, community members, and staff are always in awe of this incredibly heartwarming display of community. To me, this is what Thanksgiving is about, giving to others and supporting your neighbors and families in need. And this Sunday, the 21st from 12 to 3, we'll be once again having our turkey drop-off day. Karen, thanks for reminding us of that. That's a you know, definitely a tradition I think a lot of families take part in.
I remember that last year. I remember just being overwhelmed by it. It was just such a wonderful feeling, and there were so many people, both going in and coming out, and people were just smiling. They would take down their masks at that point and smile, and it really is. It gives me chills just thinking about such a wonderful thing for Falmouth to do.
And I think all of the food pantries can use some help this year.
Oh,
I mean,
this year,
you know, need is so great. So, yeah, so that's great. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about Thanksgiving this hour. With us is Gail Blakely, food columnist for the Enterprise newspapers, and Annie Copps, the senior editor of Food at Yankee Magazine. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Wondering, how are you observing the day this year? How has your thinking about Thanksgiving and its meaning changed over time? And is the pandemic impacting your plans? You know, one of the things we think about, we've been talking about this traditional Thanksgiving, but, you know, why turkey? And if we can't find a turkey, why can't we do something else, right?
Sure,
I mean, this might be the year to get a little creative when we're looking at food shortages and the prices of you know, going up on some things.
But we've changed the name of it over the years, too. I mean, it still is and will always be Thanksgiving. But I think the Friendsgiving that that Annie mentioned, or perhaps it was the first speaker, Friendsgiving. And now the other day I saw in the New York Times, Sidesgiving. And people are talking about the variation in diets, and that many people are really taking a look at eating more plant-based, but also the idea of just Thanksgiving can be all about the sides, and why don't we just focus on that and maybe let the turkeys go for a while.
I like the sides. Annie, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I think that it is morphing into a different thing. I loved really though that we've been talking about this name, Thanksgiving, and what Molly Herman was saying about, you know, being grateful for this day, and then maybe we don't have to just do it on Thanksgiving Day, but if we do just take this one day to remember to be thankful, I think that that's the beginning, the middle, and the end of what this day should be.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter if you're by yourself having a turkey sandwich or a frozen turkey dinner, or if you're having tofu turkey, you know, or whether you're with 20 people or you're with a group of strangers who, you know, you're the extra person that didn't have a place. It doesn't, just be thankful for that. Be, you know, not just the meal that you're having, but all the grace that's in your life. Remember it. And yeah, we should be doing it every single day, but we forget sometimes. So this is a good day to sort of underscore, codify, punctuate, put it in bold, be thankful.
Yeah, exactly. We have a listener family in Falmouth who writes, the one tradition we have at Thanksgiving is everyone at the table writes down one thing they are thankful for. We put the slips of paper into a hat and pass it around. Each person pulls a slip and reads it out loud. Some are funny, some are heartfelt, but reading them aloud connects us as we start the meal. That's a great tradition.
It absolutely.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
yes.
What
beautiful.
A great idea. Yeah. We'd love to hear about your traditions. It may be disasters. Those are always funny stories. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I've shared this story before, but I'll share it again. One of my brothers had a disaster. This was many years ago now. He decided he was going to try the, you know, the deep fried turkey out of there, and of course, like, burned it. So there was no turkey. And of course, there's no place to go get a turkey now. And my sister-in-law cut the picture of a turkey out of a magazine and put that in the center of the table.
Oh.
And then they just ate all the sides.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
I thought that was a good attitude
to
have, you know, that disaster. Have you had any disasters, Gail?
Oh, dropping the turkey, blowing up an oven by letting too much grease accumulate and having a fire start and having the glass crack on the oven door. So, yeah, I've had my share of disasters.
Yeah. How about you, Annie?
Oh, absolutely. There's always something. But my favorite one was, the first Thanksgiving after a very dear aunt of mine had passed, and her daughter, my very close cousin, wanted to host. And we were there the day before helping her with pies and prep, and it was going to be a big, big gathering. And I decided I'll get to the house early. And so I got to the house at about 8 o'clock and had my outfit on and my special apron. And I said, okay, Kim, where's the turkey? And she said, oh, let me get it. It's in the freezer. And I said, I'm sorry. What? She said, it's in the freezer. So I said, do you have any wine? Exactly. So I started with a glass of wine at 8:30, and I was able to get it defrosted. And I don't recommend it, but it was by, you know, keeping it in water and slowly, you know, but by noon we were able to get it into the oven. But yeah, everybody was tomahawked.
Oh my goodness. And then there's always the story about the people who really have never made a turkey before and go ahead and stuff it. And as you're pulling out the stuffing, you also pull out those little prepackaged delights that are in there of you know, the turkey neck and the gizzard and the liver. And people say, oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So if we have any of those first timers, this is their first time doing the Thanksgiving dinner, what advice do you get? I mean, because there's different ways you can do the turkey, right? Gail, what's your advice?
I think just make sure to, if it's frozen, defrost it over time in the refrigerator. And oftentimes they just have the directions right on there. And, you know, I make fun of those little pop-up buttons, but they really do serve to tell us when the turkey is done. So I would follow those types of directions.
How about advice, Annie?
Same. Definitely don't defrost it on your counter. Defrost your turkey in the refrigerator if it's frozen. And I also feel like, you know, turkeys are sort of hard to cook, right? They're going to, they tend to be dry. I've cooked more turkeys probably than the people at Butterball. I mean, we're to Boston Magazine, Yankee Magazine. We're known for, you got to have a turkey recipe every single year. So, they're a little fussy. So if your turkey's a little dry, put some extra gravy on it. Mm-hmm. If there are some lumps in the mashed potato, get over it. You know, just be great. Be grateful. There's something on the table that's going to taste good. Just is. And for me, the best part about Thanksgiving is I enjoy the meal and the thankfulness and all that, but that sandwich the next day.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. With turkey stuffing, cranberry sauce. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I have a trick for the potatoes. Put them through a ricer.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And then
get them as dry as possible. Dry as possible. Put them through that rice masher. And then whatever additives, make sure that they're warm, because the drier the potato and the warmer the liquids are, the more those potatoes are going to absorb. And potato masher or even a food mill.
I have to tell you, and I know people like to make homemade their own thing, but if you just want to, Bob Evans mashed potatoes in the grocery store are fabulous. No, I mean, you wouldn't think that, but they taste just like homemade mashed potatoes. So you can cheat here and there. Why not, right?
Exactly. This is not a time for guilt. Yeah.
No.
I think that sometimes maybe the three of us, people are expecting, you know, that the turkey be organically raised by nuns, they ate nothing but, a really pristine, clean, made from scratch Thanksgiving. And I've cheated. Is it cheating?
Not really cheating, right? It's lowering your stress level, so you don't need so you don't need a glass of wine at 8:30 in the morning.
Exactly. When your turkey is frozen. Yeah. Your 20-pound turkey is frozen at 8:30 in the morning. You improvise.
Yeah, exactly.
And in some ways, you know, we're if you want to call it cheating, I don't call it cheating. I call it being
creative.
But so many of our foods now that are available to us in the markets are so much of the prepackaged stuff is so very good that we shouldn't be embarrassed or ashamed to use that, like some baked potato or mashed potatoes or a casserole of some sort, or even like, you know, sometimes a pre-baked turkey, a pre-roasted turkey, just bring it home and add all the other stuff. And I think you can do that. And as I often say, if it ain't broke, let's, you know, don't fix it. So we've got a lot to be thankful for in terms of what's already done for us.
Yeah. Annie, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, I think some people, you know, you always feel like you want to, if you're not doing the green beans and the casserole, but some roasted vegetables, like some of the root vegetables. It's amazing that just roasting them in the oven, how much sweeter they are than, say, steaming them or something.
Definitely. We always either have steamed butternut or acorn squash or sweet potatoes. I think that when you roast a vegetable, it just turbocharges whatever sweetness is in there. And then that you get that little bit, like on the broccoli or on the cauliflower, you get that lovely crunch that comes with. But no, I love roasted vegetables. Absolutely. That's the, we won't mash our sweet potatoes. We will keep them whole and not whole, but in chunks. Mm-hmm. Trying to think of what else we roast, and we'll roast turnips and parsnips together.
Yeah. And that's very, and it's healthy. I mean, that's a healthy.
Yeah. And we don't purposely make it a healthy Thanksgiving, but it just kind of came out that way. We have the big caloric dishes on the table are the mashed potatoes, which I confess have a lot of butter and cream in them. And then my mom has to have a turnip souffle from the Gold Cookbook from the 1940s, a dog-eared book, but turnip souffle. And that's a little cheesy and eggy, but otherwise mm-hmm. it's roasted vegetables, and we have salad, like the cranberry chutney, pearl onions. I'm trying to think of what else we'll have. And there are a lot of pies, but
yeah, I was going to say if you're eating kind of healthy there, then you have some room for those calories from the pies, right?
And the whipped cream and the ice cream that go on them. Yeah.
Right, what kind of pies, Gail, do you do?
I do not do pies.
You don't do pies.
I love pies, but I tend to shy away from them at Thanksgiving. I tend to do baked apples with a oatmeal topping, a crunch, sort of like a like an apple crisp topping, and maybe something a little citrusy, maybe a fruit salad of some sort, and some turkey shaped or seasonally shaped, I might say, sugar cookies or gingerbread cookies. But I'm just not a huge dessert eater, and I find that the pies are overwhelming.
I'm doing apple crisp. You just mentioned apple crisp. Mm-hmm. My friend has an amazing recipe for apple crisp, so I'm doing her apple crisp.
Good.
Is what I'm doing.
Good.
What about you, Annie?
It's ironically, we're not really pie people, except my dad, who loves mincemeat pie.
Oh, you don't have that much anymore, huh?
It's a labor of love, and I do love my father, so I make a mincemeat pie. And then my mom, she can't put her finger on where this came from, but lemon meringue pie.
Which
I think we're the only family that does lemon meringue pie at Thanksgiving. Oh, so we have mincemeat and lemon meringue pie, and then I'm sure that the guests will bring probably an apple or a pumpkin pie.
Exactly. And then beverages. Do you do anything special for beverages on Thanksgiving?
Yeah. I always try to do some sort of signature something, like an apple cider sangria or something just a little festive, even if it's just two of us or four or three. I just think having something in a pitcher that's sparkling, and you can add a little bit of club soda to it and some slices of apples and, of course, those wonderful cranberries that we have. So I put something together. Pomegranate juice is always fun, too.
How about you, Annie?
No, but I'm totally stealing that idea. That's a great idea. You know, we'll get into a white and a red wine, which is kind of hard to pair, and fun to pair. But I love this. The turkey teeny or something like that.
Yeah. Even just a little skosh of brandy and some apple cider and either Prosecco or some sparkling water added to the pitcher will be really fun.
It's great. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, the Family Pantry of Cape Cod is hoping to distribute over 600 turkeys this year. We will post more information about drop times and locations for both the Family Pantry and the Service Center at our website, capeandislands.org. Again, they are also accepting donations through November 20th. Gail Blakely is the food columnist for the Enterprise newspapers, and Annie Copps is the senior editor of food for Yankee Magazine. Thank you, ladies, both for sharing your thoughts with us this morning.
Thank you.
And Annie, I'm going to be looking for that cranberry sauce recipe.
I'm sending it to you both right now.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.